So 2 days before summer officially begins, we want to talk about snow one final time for the winter of 2018-19. There was no particular reason for optimism as the season began, but over time, a bunch of storms came in and dumped a good bit of snow on western mountains. California saw snowpack and water content well above longtime averages, and parts of Oregon saw similar snow success. We'll focus on the Oregon side, both the numbers and what they mean. Scott Oviatt is Snow Survey Supervisor at the Natural Resources Conservation Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Portland. Thanks for joining us once again on The Exchange.
Thank you very much for having me.
So talk about what the office is responsible for tracking in terms of snow. Which areas?
Well, essentially, we monitor all the snowpack conditions and precipitation conditions in the mountains in Oregon and Washington. And we report out of this office on Oregon exclusively, so it's pretty much based on the political boundaries, with some exceptions being some of the sites which are located in adjacent watersheds, which either feed in or flow out, like the Klamath Basin, out of Oregon.
So, Scott, overall, how would you characterize the year in snow on the Oregon side?
Well, it's a mixed bag in that when we look to the east side of the Cascades, you know, east of our typical rain shadow, we had a very good water year in terms of total precipitation as well as snowpack accumulation starting in February. Less so on the west side, more successful in the Rogue and Umpqua basins in your region. When we moved to the northwestern quadrant of the state, well below normal, or not well below, but below normal in terms of snowpack and in terms of water year precipitation. So there are some concerns in terms of water supply for the summer in the northwestern part of the state.
I was going to ask about the precipitation generally. You just touched on that. So the question was going to be whether things that might have been snow fell as rain instead, but it sounds like precipitation generally was lacking in the northwest quadrant of the state.
That's correct. And for that matter, the entire state lacked in precipitation accumulation for the water year up until the early part of the winter, or midwinter, actually, when we transitioned into February. The colder air invaded from Canada at that point, and we were inundated, essentially, with snow, both in the mountains as well as low elevations in many instances.
And how unusual a pattern is that, Scott? I mean, to have it kind of switch around in February, because it was looking like a pretty dismal winter up until that point, I remember.
Well, it's a hard thing to put your hands around and get a feel for, and I think we've had this conversation in this program before, in that we are seeing these periods of extreme variability in the winter, where we have periods of intense precipitation and cooler temperatures followed by very warm and dry conditions, which, you know, don't typically match what we've seen in terms of normals or long-term averages in the past.
And for comparison purposes, how did Washington do?
Washington is, they are very concerned right now in terms of drought and fire, in that they received very low snowpack. The eastern side, once again, did much better than the western side. For instance, the Olympic Peninsula, one of the wettest areas in the lower 48, received in February 10% of their average annual normal snowpack.
Really? Okay, so that is not good for the Olympics for sure. So the pattern's interesting, though. I mean, because there's an assumption that you know, all the weather systems come in off the Pacific, pass over western Oregon, western Washington on their way east of the Cascades, but it sounds like for some reason the precipitation ended up greater, at least relative to usual levels, east of the Cascades.
Well, in your intro, you mentioned California receiving significant snowpack as well. The storm systems, which impacted eastern Oregon and for the state as a whole, came in from the southwest, from California, where the brunt of the precipitation was received, and then continued northeastward through eastern Oregon, eastern Washington, and then southern Idaho. You know, if you think about the cutoff between the Sawtooth Range and south, that received above normal precipitation, whereas northern Idaho was once again below normal.
Scott Oviatt is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the Snow Survey Supervisor for the Natural Resources Conservation Service of the federal government based in Portland. Questions, comments, concerns, ideas about snow surveys, join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Scott, when are the last physical surveys done? Those are wrapped up in what, the beginning of April?
Yeah, generally beginning of April, we do have some that occur May 1st when we look on the high elevations of the Cascades, but for the most part, April 1st is the remainder of the physical surveys, and that's to coincide with the peak of snowpack, which normally occurs from the second week of March through April 1st.
And how long, I'm looking at the current snowtell reports, Rogue and Umpqua show about, 4% of available snow water equivalent, so, doesn't sound like much, but I'm sure there are individual places, individual peaks where there's probably still a bunch of snow hanging around. I can see Mount Ashland when I drive to work in the morning. It looks still fairly snowy.
Well, yeah, and that's deceptive. We pretty much steer people away from looking at the snowpack maps and the snowpack reports following, early to mid-May, depending upon the year, and especially this year, because that value reference 4% is based upon one site measuring less than an inch of snow water equivalent. And keep in mind that the sites that we refer to in calculating these averages are based in the mid elevations and sometimes the lower elevations, because that is a major contributing portion to water supply in the spring and summer runoff periods.
I can see where things can go. All right, based on what you just told me, then, so basically, this is you have very few sites that are showing any sort of snowpack still, and so the variation can be really wide.
That's correct. And then when you see the snow, when visually you see it in higher elevations, that's in the alpine regions, and that does contribute, but it's a later contribution for, continual stream flow throughout the year, as opposed to being the snow melt runoff component and the precipitation component that we rely on for municipalities and irrigation purposes.
Yeah, and the other end of the spectrum, if we talk about not looking too carefully at the current charts, as you show the Grand Ronde Powder Burnt Imnaha region at 348% of snow water equivalent. So there must be one site that's really buried.
Yeah, one site is a high elevation site above 7,500 feet, still measuring snowpack. All the lower elevation sites have melted out. Right now we're referring people to essentially March 31st. At that point in time, the entire state was 123% of normal in terms of snow water equivalent. And as I referenced earlier, when we look from Klamath northeastward, we were anywhere from 166% in the John Day Basin to 130 in the Klamath Basin. So that's where those impacts were, and we were continuing. We had the big storm event in early February, about the 10th or 15th of February, and then we had what caused the low elevation flooding in many cases, which we call the Willamette and other rivers, Dorena Reservoir, in April 10th or April 9th or 10th. That also was associated with some higher elevation snow, so we built up our snowpack once again at that point. But since then, we've been warm and rather dry, and we've haven't accumulated a lot of snowpack.
So, Scott, I have to ask, when we look at these snow water equivalents, it is not like you set an average for an entire state, for example. I mean, it's the snow water equivalent based on historical averages in that region, right?
Yeah, I mean, we refer to it as for the whole state. I referenced the 123%, but that's just looking at all the available sites and calculating across the state. It's more important to consider these local basins, for instance, Rogue and Umpqua or Klamath, where we can look at the individual watershed and the attributes that are going on there, where the storms are impacting and how that's contributing to reservoir filling and stream flow runoff.
But I ask this because just to give an example, pulled completely out of the air, 95% for Rogue Umpqua could be like 150% for the Warner region, right?
Exactly. I mean, and it's based upon where, some sites are more heavily, or some basins are more heavily instrumented just because of where we've historically had measurements, and that can impact the values as well. And if you're having storm events which impact low and mid elevations, obviously that reflects well upon our measurement sites. Whereas if it's a higher elevation snow, above 4,000 or 5,000 feet, oftentimes that won't show up, whereas snow is accumulating and it looks good from a, when you're looking from the valley up to the top of the peaks, but it's not necessarily contributing to the snowpack, which is of value for our runoff.
Again, Scott Oviatt, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Snow Survey Supervisor for Oregon at the Natural Resources Conservation Service in Portland. Here's a call from Ann in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you. So since I've lived in Eugene for 53 years, and I'm a bicycle commuter, I've paid attention to the weather. And one of the things that I've noticed is it My memory is that we in Eugene have been below averages for precipitation for 18 out of the last 20 years. And I was wondering if that corresponded to any other historical patterns for our area.
Okay.
So, thank you.
Thank you, Ann. Appreciate that. Averages for Eugene. Any knowledge of that, Scott?
Well, I would refer that question to the National Weather Service, because they're our sister agency in terms of referencing long-term averages for lower elevation sites. You know, we're the experts on mountain meteorology, mountain snowpack, and mountain precipitation. So I guess I wouldn't, venture a guess on that, because they would have the information as far as, those long-term averages she referenced. So patterns-wise, they would be able to speak to what's going on with El Nino and La Nina in reference to those conditions. We can tell you more about, what the conditions are in terms of the snowpack and the rainfall accumulation. So, unfortunately, I don't have an answer for that question.
All right. I can provide some numbers I just dug up from the National Weather Service showing where Eugene stands at the moment. Since October 1st, 33 inches of precipitation, which is about 10 and a quarter inches departure from normal. So 10 and a quarter inches under normal. And then last year was even a bit less at the same time. So Ann's right that the last two water years in particular have been and low. I can tell her that much. Since January 1st, about 2 1/4 inches under normal. Last year was lower than that average as well. So two not great years for sure in a row in Eugene. And what, I mean, was there reason to believe at the outset of this particular winter, Scott, that we were going to end up with what we ended up with, or were there long-term projections for something a bit drier than what we got?
Well, as we know, it was an El Nino year going in, so that can mean about a 50% chance that we receive above normal or below normal precipitation. So all in all, it came out close to that aspect of it. Just where those storm tracks hit is the key to how it impacted. You mentioned the Eugene and the Willamette region in the mountains had 87%, or as of this morning, 87% of normal for the water year precipitation. The Eugene and the upper Willamette region did receive more precipitation than the north portion, like Portland and Salem northward, and especially when we look at the North Coast Basin. So it was right on the edge of where those storms were impacting. So there was definitely a drier trend this year. But in terms of predicting it, obviously we don't characterize that. The Weather Service does that, and we rely on their expertise from that perspective. But each year, you go in with a fresh frame of mind going, okay, what does the future hold? And you hope that you have a cooler, wet spring and sufficient snowpack accumulation during the winter.
So how much of a difference does it make, Scott, when in the year the precipitation falls? For example, if it falls as snow or if it falls as rain. I mean, if you get a great month of rain in May, just as a wild example, does that not equal the kind of benefit you get from the same amount of precipitation falling as snow in the mountains?
Well, it depends, of course. With the Roganumqua and the Willamette in particular is a rainfall-driven basin, but Roganumqua is kind of a mixed bag in that it relies on the upper elevation cascade snowmelt runoff in association with the lower elevation rainfall. So if you can have sufficient rainfall during those periods that is not flooding component, moderate rainfall or light rainfall, then you can... If you have a cooler, wetter spring, you can limit the amount of evapotranspiration, so you can continue to have stream flows longer in the spring. And that'll be a key to your component or your comment you were mentioning about steelhead. They need the cooler stream flows and river conditions to ensure success.
You're like the perfect guest. You can talk about our next segment in addition to the one we're in now.
No, I'm not a biologist.
So Scott, I noticed that some of the sites that had monitored weather for very long times turned up some real precipitation records. I was looking back at some of the releases from early May. It looks like a station near Riddle had some record-setting precipitation this year.
Yeah, and that's primarily attributed to that April event. April, as we recall, we statewide we had the huge inundation influx of moisture from the Pacific, and a lot of the reservoirs were in, they weren't prepared, essentially, because they're in flood control mode, and they're start the spring, you're building up. And after April 1st, we generally don't see rainfall events like that when we have not historically. So it caught everyone unprepared, and we had to adjust on the fly, per se. And with all the amount of precipitation, you're talking about 8 inches of rain in 3 days. That's a big stress to the any river system, which is already running at near capacity.
That is a bunch of water. So let's talk about water that falls in the early to mid-spring. Does water falling on snowpack ever add to the water content of the snowpack, or does it just really start the melting process?
It can add under certain conditions. If you have a drier, less dense snowpack, it has more ability to absorb that rainfall. But when we move towards spring and we do get these typical rain on snow events, usually your snowpack is very dense, very wet, and primed to melt out. So when the rain falls on it, it just adds to that and makes more of a contribution to runoff, which can be catastrophic.
So again, since NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service, is part of the Department of Agriculture, I assume there are some products that you're putting out there to indicate for people who rely upon water for the growing season what they can expect. Is there any part outside the northwest quadrant of Oregon where there's some warnings about the streams being lower?
Well, essentially, our general statement as of May 1st was that the forecasts are pointing towards near and above average water supply in the eastern and southern Oregon this year. When we look at western and central Oregon, they're pretty below to near average flows. And, you know, when we focus on your area, the Rogue and Umpqua, or the Rogue primarily, our June 1st forecasts called for, 90 to 100% of stream flow for the period June through September. Now, the caveat on that, these are based upon statistical calculations of volume of water passing a prescribed stream gauge. But trying not to get too technical here, but a lot of that water did pass by, as we know, in April and May. So it'll be dependent upon what our future weather conditions do in terms of if it's a very hot, dry period, how quickly these stream flows go down, based upon evaporation demands and, of course, irrigation use and municipality use. So it's going to be key if we could stay cooler. You mentioned the cooling trend over the next few days. If that can remain in place for a while, that will definitely assist as we head into the prime summer months of July and August. But we've also seen years like 2017 where we had even more snow than this year, where it became so warm in July and August that our demand exceeded our stream flows, and we quickly developed water supply shortages throughout the state.
All right, so the weather from here on out makes a difference. It's not just what we got, but it's also how we use it and how it's needed between now and the time we get precipitation again, which in southern Oregon figures to be quite some time. Scott Oviatt is Snow Survey Supervisor at the Natural Resources Conservation Service of the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Portland. Thanks for joining us. Talk to you next snow season.
Okay, I appreciate the time.
All right, take care.